And our special guest tonight, Debbie Vigay. We're going to be talking about her work, Battlefield Victory, Winning the War Against Satan. Wait till you hear what we have to say next on Coast to Coast AM. Debbie Vigay has been called the patron saint of the supernatural. She's a writer and speaker who trains people in real-life spiritual warfare against the demons. When Debbie isn't battling the forces of darkness out in the real world or penning tales of danger and intrigue set in her fictional worlds that she plays a recurring character on the STEM Outreach audio drama, Dr. Geek's Laboratory. You can visit Debbie online. Her website's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Now, that's a very, very, very interesting career, Debbie.
Thank you.
My gosh. How did you get involved battling demons?
Actually, it started when I was four because I was home with my parents. It was an early Saturday morning, and I was going to get up to watch the cartoons. I went into the library at home to pick out one of the picture books to take with me, and I was sitting there, and all of a sudden, clear as day, I heard something in the empty room call my name, and I'm like, and I was out of there so fast. I mean, I've never run that fast in my life. And I was just shaking until my parents woke up. And I talked to them and I said, you know, this happened. And they tried to come up with rational explanations for what it could have been other than what I was sure it was. And, you know, so I'm like, you know, that's not what happened. But, you know, I didn't really talk about it. But there was a lot of stuff that happened to me after that. If I had to get up in the middle of the night to use the restroom or anything, I'd have to keep my eyes closed because if I'd look in the mirror, I'd see things looking back at me.
How'd you know where you were going? Sleepwalking almost, huh?
I memorized it really well, the path from my bedroom to the bathroom. It was great, you know?
Yes.
And I did have, my mom was a tremendous help, though. I had a recurring demonic nightmare for 4 or 5 years until I told her about it. And she helped me pray and get released from that, and that was a relief. And then in high school, I started learning that I wasn't the only person that had had these kinds of experiences. And when I reached college, I ran into people that not only were having these kinds of experiences, but were having much more intense experiences and didn't know what to do about them. So I kind of ended up learning how to fight not only for myself, but for other people, and which was pretty intense. And the more I did that, it kind of snowballed, where I would have like friends of friends, people I didn't know calling me in the middle of the night saying, so-and-so told me to call you because terrible things are happening to me. Jeez. And I don't know what to do about it. So it just kind of kept going from there.
This battle with demons, is it the same as the battle against good and evil?
Yes, in many respects. I mean, every major culture, religion has their idea of what evil looks like. And oftentimes it's an entity. And or more than one, you know, and it is quintessentially what people have battled, you know, over the ages. I mean, you'll call it different things, but at the end of the day, a demon is pure evil. And that is the most epic battle between good and evil that there is.
Then you started writing about this.
Yes. That was actually I was very terrified about that because it has been such a taboo topic for so many years for so many people that I would only tell a few select friends. And like I said, if they found people that needed help, they'd refer them to me. And I finally was like, you know, I can't just keep helping one person at a time because this is an epidemic. And so God kept pushing me saying, you know, you need to write a book. And I kept saying, yeah, I'll do it. And then not do it because I didn't want to. You know? And finally I got over it and I'm like, this has to happen. And I, before I wrote the book, I sat down a lot of people in my life and said, look, here's the thing you don't know about me that's going to become very public in the next month.
Huh. You warned them.
I did. This is your chance to jump ship and no hard feelings, you know, but if you want to be my friend, this is what you need to know, you know, and that was fascinating. Some very fascinating conversations there. And I've been creating I have a Facebook group dedicated to people who are fighting these battles, who are, you know, where they can get prayer and help and support and things like that. And I'm always willing to talk to people because, I mean, everyone has different experiences, but they're so similar when you boil it down. You know, there's root causes are very similar.
What have you learned, Debbie, about these demons?
What have I learned? They're nasty little buggers. That's what I've
Oh,
learned.
they are.
One of the most important things I've learned is, this is going to sound funny, but they are lazy. You know, they record, you know, they spend energy just like any other creature, and whatever they can do that's like the path of least resistance, they will do. So I mean, most of the time, they're trying to harass people because they're trying to keep them from achieving their potential or helping someone else achieve their potential. You know, I always say if you're getting a lot of flack, you're doing something right. You know, and but what they'll do is if they can scare you with something very small and very subtle or just kind of distract you, they'll do that because that's easy. And, you know, it only escalates when you learn to, you know, kind of say, you know, I'm not going to play those games. I'm not going to be worried about, you know, the things I can't see out of the corner of my eye. I'm not going to be worried about the shadows that shift in the room. And that's when they'll have to step up their game. But if they can distract you, if they can frighten you, or if they can just get you thinking about something else instead, they will, because that's easiest for them.
You've come across some very frightening experiences. I want to get into some of these stories, Debbie. But can this battle be won? Evil's pretty darn tough.
I believe that the battle will not be won until, you know, the end times, whenever that may be, God willing, hundreds of thousands of years from now. You know, but at the same time, the battle, there, you can have victory in your own life. And, you know, there will be some skirmishes that can continue on and off, but you can get to the point where you have to deal with it once a month or once a year or like a couple of hours, or just be a little bit more aware instead of being under constant attack and oppression like so many people are.
Explain.
When you finally understand how to stand up for yourself and how to get rid of demons, it gets a little tough for a while because usually they fight back. And until you reach the point where you lose your fear of them. When they no longer have the ability to influence you, you reach a point where what they can do is so minimal that it's not as impactful. And therefore, you don't have to expend as much energy to look for them or fight them or be worried about them. At that point, it's kind of just like doing maintenance. You know, it's like changing the oil in your car. You do a 3-month checkup and check your life out and make sure that there's nothing that's gone awry that you've missed.
Are these demons out to take our souls? Are they out to physically hurt us, kill us? What do they want to do?
Their most primary purpose is to keep us from fulfilling our God-given potential. If they can take souls, they will. If they can hurt us, they will. But there are also some restraints. You know, the only things they can do to us are things that are being permitted for them to do to us. You know, which I try to remind people, no matter how scary it gets, no matter how uncomfortable it is, you look at like the biblical story of Job, you know, where God and Satan had a discussion about how, you know, great Job was, and Satan's like, yeah, take it all away, and he'll no longer be in your corner. And God said, fine, but don't touch the man himself. And then when that didn't work, Satan came back and said, yeah, but he still has his health and himself, and no wonder he's not, you know, folding under the pressure. And God says, fine, you can make him sick, but you can't kill him. And I think that's an important principle is to remember is, you know, there is someone out there looking out for us. There are angels, there's God, however you perceive him. And the battle is only going to go as far as it's going to be permitted to go in that area before there is some kind of intercession. But things can get really, really rough, and people need to learn to protect themselves because, you know, you don't want to have to rely on someone else to step in because that's keeping you from actually unlocking your potential as a person and doing whatever it is you're meant to do. Teach people or, you know, write your own books or become a minister to some group of people. You know, oftentimes, like I said, the demons are struggling to keep us from doing good in this world. So if they can keep us from doing good, then the world just keeps decaying and getting worse and worse, and they're winning. And so that's what they really want, is to just keep people busy and unfocused and their heads down and not doing anything for humanity.
Let's talk about some of these frightening experiences that you've had. And I've been calling you, Debbie, all week long, a demonologist. Is that pretty accurate?
That is absolutely accurate. I study I study demons, and I study them across religions and cultures, because I figured, you know, the best way to defeat your enemy is to really know him. A little bit of Sun Tzu in there. But, yeah, I've had some very frightening experiences. One of the most intense ones I had was several years ago. I was at a writer's conference, and it was a key turning point in my life and my career, because it was the conference where I decided that was what I was going to choose as a career, that I was going to go after being a writer and not do something else with my life. I woke up in the middle of the night. Actually, I was dreaming in the middle of the night. I was dreaming that I was being choked to death. And part of me was like starting to panic, because in my dream, I could tell there was something more going on, that it wasn't just a dream. And I finally realized that what was happening to me had an element that was in the real world. And so I was just struggling to cast out the demon in my dream and in my mind. And I finally managed to make like this tiny whisper to say something. And at that moment, I woke up, and there was a demon sitting on my chest with it, you know, choking me to death. And that was terrifying.
Yeah, I guess it is.
And it was very traumatic, because my husband was actually in law school. It was his first week of law school, and it was this big writer's conference I'd been waiting for, that was life-changing for me. So my father had actually gone with me, so I wouldn't be traveling alone, and because he knew I didn't like to stay places at night by myself, because of obvious reasons. And literally, I'm shocked. You know, he didn't wake up during the whole thing, and I finally ran into the other room and like called my husband and woke him up in the middle of the night, saying, "I just got choked and it almost killed me." And he's like, "Oh my gosh!"
Does he believe this? He believes this, right?
He absolutely believes it. He's seen too many things not to believe.
Do these demons have names, Debbie?
I know
the archangels have names. Do demons have names?
There are several different types of demons. Fallen angels, which were, you know, once angels, they have names. Generally speaking, they have names very similar to the names that they had as angels. Only angels, you know, the names tend to, you know, end in EL, you know, Michael, Raphael, Gabriel, because that means of God. And when they fall, they lose the L. So they're no longer of God. But otherwise, they have names that they had when they were angels. And then there are a lot of created demons that can be created by people or created by fallen angels. And those, to my knowledge, have no names. I'd call them Hey Ugly.
and are they like ambassadors of the devil?
Most of them are. Some of them are a lot more intelligent than others. The ones that are really, like I say, really dumbed down, they're a little bit more like automatons. They're not really thinking. They're just kind of performing a simple task over and over. The ones that are a little more intelligent are certainly ambassadors of the devil. That's a very good way of putting it.
It is, in a very sick way, isn't
it? That's very true. Yes, it is a very sick way of putting it, but it is very good. It is very apt. But yeah. Other terrifying things that have happened to me, I get scratched and bitten a lot.
Oh my God.
Yeah, even when I'm out like somewhere like promoting my fiction, like at a convention, all of a sudden someone...
Fiction be the Robin Hood Demon's Bane book.
Yes, right? Exactly.
We'll get into that later.
Thank you. Yes, but yeah, I'll be at a convention just not talking about demons, promoting my books or whatever, and someone will look at me and say, "Oh my gosh."
And you didn't feel it?
Sometimes I don't. Sometimes I don't realize it until after it's happened, you know, by a couple of minutes.
Do you wake up with these?
No. I get attacked in my dreams a lot, but I do not get scratched or bitten in my dreams. That only happens when I'm awake, and I do not know why. But
How long are the scratches? Just like an inch or two?
They're usually about 2 to 3 inches long.
Deep?
No. Just enough to make you bleed.
And enough to make you aware that they're doing something.
That something happened, you know. And the same thing with the bites. They're shallow, but enough to make you bleed.
Well,
because a scratch or a bite from a demonic entity, you have to treat it instantly if you get it, because those things will get infected faster than any regular cut ever.
Well, Debbie, what's to prevent them from really hurting you?
I believe that God intervenes when it, God intervenes when it's life-threatening. I've had moments where I know that I've been saved. Like, I've been thrown down the stairs before, But there have also been times where I've been pushed down the stairs and something else has gotten in front of me and pushed me back so that I've fallen backwards and sat down. And I, you know, there's literally like a tug of war. You're like, okay, so apparently if I'd fallen down that time, it would have been really bad, you know. But it's kind of, it's one of the hazards of what I do. And I know that that it scares people a lot, and I don't want it to scare them because fear is the goal of the enemy.
It is indeed the goal of the enemy, but, I mean, I wouldn't put yourself in jeopardy.
Like I said, I have a lot of faith that God protects me at the end of the day.
Have you been trained, you know, professionally?
No, it's all been on-the-job training, so to speak.
Huh.
I've done a lot of research, read a lot of things. I've talked to a few people who've done some of the things I've done, and it's a fascinating field, and different people have different takes on it. I've found what I think really works and how I think I can really help people.
Are you an exorcist?
I am. It's not nearly as common. I can exorcise people or houses. And if you've reached that level, that's pretty bad. You know?
Is it? The point you don't really want to be a part of, is it?
You want to catch things at the oppression level before they progress that far, because then you've got a whole load of hurt in store for a lot of people.
How do you know the difference, Debbie, between a demon and just a haunting?
Hauntings are, in my experience, because I've seen one or two ghosts, and they actually scare the crap out of me. They scare me far more than demons because I don't know what to do about them. I look at them and go, I have nothing.
But you know? They're pretty benevolent, aren't they?
They're in my experience, what I see them as is kind of more like recordings, kind of something traumatic happened and it left kind of a scar on the place. So what you're seeing is almost, it's like not live, it's Memorex, you know, the old commercials. But it's like there's something there, but not really there. There's no sentient entity there that knows what it's doing necessarily.
Debbie, since you've been doing this, how many demons do you think you have expunged?
Oh, heavens.
Lots?
Yeah, I would say.
They go away for sure, for good?
It's very hard to get one to go away for good. It is possible to destroy them permanently, but it is very, very difficult. The easier thing is to get them to leave a particular person in place and force them to keep wandering. But hundreds of those.
Battlefield Victory is a nonfiction book. It's about demons. It's about the real deal, isn't it?
Correct.
What's the message you want people to get with this one?
What I want is for people to be able to read it and instantly kind of understand what it is that they need to do to protect themselves. The people that are coming to the book usually fall into two categories: people who've had an experience of their own, or people who know somebody who's had an experience and are just wanting either more information or wanting to know what they can do to help, you know, something like that. I want people to read the book and come away equipped with the tools to take care of themselves. This kind of It really stemmed from when I was getting 3 a.m. calls from strangers, you know, saying, so-and-so told me to call you because blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and I'd be talking to the same people night after night, and I'm like, listen, I can do this for you, but until you do this for yourself, you know, it's not going to be a permanent fix, and, you know, I'm not going to get any sleep.
All right, Debbie, we're going to come back and talk more about your work in the demonic world on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast. Debbie Vigay with us, her book, one of them, Battlefield Victory. We'll also talk about Robin Hood's Demon's Bane. But tell us about Battlefield Victory again, Debbie, and again, winning the war against Satan. You're pretty positive that can be done.
Absolutely. In a person's life, they can certainly get to the point where they're on top, you know, and the demonic interference in their life is at a minimum. I absolutely believe that, and I've seen people get there, and it's amazing, and the change in their life is tremendous because they lose a lot of their fear and the things that are holding them back, and they end up being able to do things that they didn't never thought they could.
All right, so let us get into some of these strange encounters with these demons. And again, the difference between demons and ghosts, do you find that very difficult to decipher?
Not at all. It's funny because, like I say, I'm very, ghosts scare me. I don't know what to do with them. They're just kind of there doing their own thing, and there's nothing really for me to detect. But, you know, so I see a ghost, I scream like a little girl. But demons, even if all of a sudden they're there, it's more of a startle reaction, and it's kind of like someone walked up behind you and you didn't realize they were there until you turned around. It's that kind of, and it's a visceral kind of, ew, that's gross and that's slimy and that's just all kinds of, you know, unnatural and evil. So for me, it is very easy to tell the difference. And thankfully, I've only had a couple times where I've, you know, experienced something that was more ghost-like, and don't ever care to have those again, but I'm sure there will be.
All right, let's talk a little specifically about what you point out in Battlefield Victory.
Mm-hmm. Sure. There are different types of demons, and the ones that are the scariest are the fallen angels. They can go anywhere. They can attack anyone. They have their own agenda. But most people will never encounter one in their lifetime. They're usually orchestrating things on a much larger scale. So to have a personal interaction with one of those is incredibly rare, but it does happen. And then you have created demons, which can be created by the fallen angels to serve, you know, certain tasks, or even by people themselves. These are the kind of demons that, you know, when people talk about seeing shadows move in a room or hearing whispering, those are the kinds of things that they're encountering. Those are also much easier to defeat than a fallen angel. But it is 99% of what people think of as demonic is one of these created, what I call a created demon. And some of them are not very old. Some of them are, you know, ages old and a lot more clever. But they all have similar modes of behavior, where they're the ones who are trying to just kind of scare or intimidate or distract you all the time.
Have you ever heard of a case, though, Debbie, where a demon actually killed somebody?
I've heard things like that. I cannot verify for sure that it has happened. I did come across, I was on a ghost tour with friends once. They thought it would be funny to take me on a ghost tour.
Right.
Yeah. And at the end of the night, they were the ones going, you know, maybe this is a bad.
Now, was this a ghost hunt or a demon hunt?
It was just like a ghost tour in one of the cities, you know, come see all the haunted places. And there was two houses that definitely had demonic entities attached to them. And one of them, there had been this boy who had this horrible thing has happened to him. He went up on the roof and he was swearing he couldn't move and he was paralyzed and then something threw him off. I would be willing to say that that was a demon that did that, even though I was not there. This happened, you know, years before. It kind of had all the hallmarks of something like that happening. I think it's rare that demons kill people. I think they try a lot more than they succeed.
What causes a demon to do the dastardly things that it does?
Like I say, their whole goal is there are some that are just evil for evil's sake, and, you know, let's oppose God in every way we can and oppose God's work in every way we can. And there are others that are just, they're drawn to people who are doing things with their life. People are, you know, opening ministries or opening charities or, you know, just doing, you know, good works and things like that because they want to oppose it. You know, it's very, if you think about in Judaism, the idea of Satan is not that he's a fallen angel, but that he is an angel doing his job. And his job is to oppose you so that you have something to overcome to make you stronger. Well, while I don't necessarily hold with that belief, I do think that most demons, their whole goal is to oppose the work of good in this world.
Huh. Okay, now let's talk a little bit about your other book, Robin Hood, Demon's Bane. What the heck is that title?
Well, he's you know, he's a
come up with a title I can pronounce, can't you?
I know. I'm sorry. We, my co-author and I, James Tuck, we had all kinds of fun trying to figure out how to title that series. The first book, Mark
Robin
Black,
Hood, Demon's Bane. That's the title.
Yeah, that's the title of the series.
What does that mean?
It means the scourge of demons. It means that he is a thorn in their side. And so Robin Hood is a demon slayer.
Oh, you've turned Robin Hood into the good guy again.
Yes. Well, I'm a romantic at heart. Robin Hood's always been a good guy to me ever since I was a little girl.
So he's out to get demons.
He's out to get demons. What we've done is we've taken the story of Robin Hood with all the characters you know and put a supernatural twist on it. So that John is like a sorcerer king, and the Sheriff of Nottingham is like an arch fiend that he's raised, and they're trying to spread darkness across the face of England and eventually the world. And that the crusade that King Richard is off on is also a multi-pronged thing where they're fighting evil on the spiritual plane. But we had a lot of fun. We decided we wanted to write a book together. He does a lot of gritty urban fantasy. I do epic dark fantasy. And we were trying to decide what we should do together. And we were kind of like, you know, just knocking some ideas around. And I'm like, I've always wanted to do a Robin Hood story. And he's like, me too. And we're like, there you go. You know, since we both work with the supernatural a lot in our fiction, that just seemed very like a very natural fit for us. And we were able to, you know, bring up some of the scare value of it, up the intensity, you know, of the stakes of what's going on. We've been having so much fun writing it. The first book, Mark of the Black Arrow, is already out. The second book comes out in August.
What's been the reaction?
People love it. We've been getting reviews saying, I didn't think there was anything new you could do to Robin Hood, but here it is, and it's great. So, which we're thrilled by. You know, we're like, yay, people liked our idea. And they're like, not freaking out, going, why did you put supernatural elements in Robin Hood?
How does Robin Hood eradicate a demon?
Well, he's been trying to figure that out, actually.
It's not easy.
No, we have not made him completely successful at that yet. But what we're doing is we're mixing elements of old paganism in England with the emergence of Christianity. So we have kind of this nexus point where magic and the idea of fairies and fae and stuff like that in the forest still exist, even though their knowledge of that is dwindling out. So they're using their modern faith and the old sacred objects kind of in conjunction with each other. So it gets really fun. We're doing a lot of really cool twists on it. And we're making Maid Marian, she's an awesome character in this. She's like a true descendant of kind of like druids. And yet she's also, you know, this princess. And with the Christian faith and everything, and so it makes her incredibly powerful.
Interesting take. Okay, back to demons, though.
Yes.
And you believe they're real?
Absolutely.
No question about it.
None whatsoever. You can't see the things I've seen and not believe
them. How are they created?
Well, the fallen angels, you know, were God-created angels, and a third of them, I believe it is, fell when they rebelled against him. So that's how those happen. The way, and they can, you know, they have ability to make, you know, lesser demons. People can make demons actually by, and you get to the idea, down to the level of what I call a personal demon. People have bad habits and bad choices that they make that usually stem from something that happened early in their childhood, like a traumatic event of some sort or just an event that gave them the wrong perception of the world. The more they nurture these bad habits and the more they nurture these fears, the more power they gain over a person. So, I mean, I was looking at the concept of, you know, people always talk about, you know, alcoholism or this or that as a personal demon. And I'm like, well, what if what we're talking about is actually some sort of demonic entity? Because when you can see some people, it's like they're almost driven by something inside them. And you're like, why so much more so than somebody else? It's because they've been feeding and nurturing these lies that they've believed since childhood. You know, usually it's something like, I'm not good enough, no one likes me, you know, things like that. And to the point where they're no longer the ones in control. They're no longer the ones making decisions about their life based on rational choices, but these knee-jerk reactions. that happens long enough in a person, and the thing becomes sentient. It becomes self-aware. And if it is powerful enough and strong enough, it can actually live on past the death of its human host and go try to find somebody else to attack. Those are one of the things that I try to get to at in Battlefield Victory. As I say, you know, there's a step-by-step way to rid yourself of these. And for some people, it's a lot more comfortable to talk about it in terms of, you know, just the bad habit or the psychological issue or what have you. And I'm like, you know, and like, if that's what you need to do to get it done, that's fine, but that's not how I recognize these entities as being. But so we can create them ourselves. And once, like I say, if one lives on past its human host, it just becomes stronger and stronger through the centuries.
Have you ever failed at eradicating a demon?
Not. I'm in the process of working with some people, a few different people, on some demon issues. So I will say not yet, but you know, you never know. Hopefully not.
Hopefully not. It's amazing.
It's.
Have you ever talked to a priest about this?
I've talked. Oh my goodness, I talked to a pastor at my church when I was younger, in college, and he looked at me like I had grown a second head. And I'm like, dude, good, evil, angels, demons, you're a pastor, you should believe in this stuff. And he's like, eh. And I'm like, oh my goodness, we're not even speaking the same language. And then I kind of like, I'm like, I don't even want to talk to, you know, anyone at church about this anymore. And then what was funny was when my husband and I were getting married, the pastor that we were going to have marry us, you know, sat down with us for several sessions before he would perform the wedding. And I finally said something to him. I said, look, I, you know, you're not the guy I talked to, but some guy at the same church, you know. And he's like, are you kidding me? And all of a sudden he like started pulling books out of his desk, and they were all books on spiritual warfare. And he's like, I wish you had come to me, because I totally understand, because I've seen demons. And I'm like, oh, good.
can you feel a demon instantly when you're around it? Or do you have to summon it up? What do you do?
If it wants to be noticed, it's impossible to ignore. If it's trying to hide, I actually have to be looking for it. I have to be wanting to know it.
Do you have to go into a trance, or do you meditate or anything like that?
I have to make myself really still. I just kind of calm my mind down and just kind of focus. And I say, "What is there anything wrong here? Is there anything that feels dark?" You know. And sometimes I even have to do that when I'm like helping people with problems in their homes. So it's like I'll have to walk through the house and I'll bless every room. You know, I lay hands on the walls in every single room and ask God's blessings and protection and everything, and cast out anything that might be present. But usually I'm also going through going, where is the problem spot, you know, and trying to find it. I can also close my eyes, and if it's a place I know, I can kind of visualize. You know, it's like looking at floor plans,
sure,
you know, in your head, and I can kind of visualize. It's like one spot will look dark to me. I'm like, okay, that's where I need to focus. Sometimes it's really obvious, because there will be a shadow where there should be no shadow. You're like, that's not subtle, not at all. You know, or, I mean, I've been in my house where all of a sudden things start getting thrown across the room, or, you know, being pushed over, and you're like, okay, that made itself pretty well known too. But,
are you ever concerned about your own safety?
Not anymore.
You were?
Yes, for years I was. And for years and years, I was actually, the thing I was most terrified of, because I would see stuff in mirrors at night and things like that, was I was most terrified of seeing a demon fully materialize in front of me. Because the visual for me just somehow was scary, you know? And one day, it was like 4 or 5 years ago, I just had it. And I'm like, you know what? Do your worst. And I saw a demon completely materialize, and I looked at it, and I'm like, you're so much scarier in my own head. I mean, I'm a writer. I could have come up with a much more impressive image, you know, and I just started laughing. And I'm like, you know what? That power you had over me, that fear that you put in me, that is over, because I'm not afraid of that anymore. You know, and I've been afraid that, you know, I've been afraid of being injured. Like, I'm always very, very careful when I use like when I'm using like an X-Acto knife to open, you know, a box from Amazon or whatever, or, you know, I'm using a butcher knife in the kitchen, I'm always very careful.
Well,
about
you
blades.
Should be.
Yes, I should be. And I've always been kind of paranoid. And then all of a sudden, one day, I mean, I was literally, it was Christmas, and I was breaking down the boxes in the garage, and I had the X-Acto knife, and something actually grabbed the knife and twisted, and it sliced across my wrist.
Oh, come on now, Deb.
Yeah, and I look down, and I'm like, and I'm still standing. And I just started laughing because it was really shallow, and it was just like, you know,
now,
and I'm like.
Did somebody think that you tried to do it to yourself?
No.
Oh, okay.
My family knew better.
All right.
I'm like, look what happened. And then they all laughed with me because laughter is a very powerful tool. They strive for fear, and if you can make a mockery of what they're doing, they'll move on to something new, you know, or move on to someone else even.
It's amazing. It truly is.
It is. And what amazes me most is that the more I talk about it, the more I realize how many people have had experiences.
Well, you're going to find when we open up the phone lines next hour.
Oh, dear.
How many people have had these experiences.
But yeah, I mean, when I was growing up, I thought it was just me. You know, I didn't know other people had these things. And until I finally, you know, met a couple of people. And you'd sit there. It'd be one of those things where it would take you 4 hours to actually kind of edge toward the conversation because nobody wanted to bring it up first, but everyone wanted to talk about it, you know. And now I've reached the point where I'm like, you know, I would say 40% of the population at least has had an experience and they just do not talk about it because they're afraid of what people will think. I mean, one of my, two of my friends that I told right before I published the book, I'm like, look, this is who I am. This is what I do. This is the things you don't know about me. And they sat there and they were kind of like, oh. And then finally the husband spoke up and said, I've never told a living soul this, not even my wife, but this happened to me when I was blah, blah, blah. And she was staring at him like, how come you never told me? He's like, because I didn't want you to think I was crazy. And I was like, Everyone has that reaction. Everyone is either afraid that people will think they're crazy or they're afraid that they imagined it. And, you know, and it's, but at the same time, when something happens to you, there is an awareness that something unnatural has happened.
Maybe it's because you like the number 13.
I do love the number 13. I like to break stereotypes and things like that. 13 has always been, you know, when you know back in the day when people, what's your lucky number? I'm like 13. Why not? You know, but then
you were born on the 13th?
No.
No.
But I just kind of chose it because I refused to let the number hold any power because I knew people that actually thought it was, you know, a scary thing. And one of the great things was when I was trying to get published, I had a teacher at the one conference, the one where I actually got choked at, who's named Nancy Holder, who I'm now a co-author with.
Mm-hmm.
And she's won like 5 Bram Stoker Awards for horror. She's amazing. And one of the best pieces of advice she gave all of her students that day was to pick a number of rejection letters you would get before your acceptance letter. And don't make it too low and don't make it too high, but that way you see every rejection as a stepping stone to the acceptance and they don't hurt.
All right, hang with us, Debbie. We'll come back with more. And phone calls next.